This message is part of the educational ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
I'd like you to think to a time when you felt left out. To a time when you felt left out. Now, that might be recent. That might be a long time ago. It could be in different contexts. It could be here in the dorms. It could be something that has to do with your family, something at work, maybe when you were little. I mean, you can feel left out at multiple times in your life. Like, for instance, it can happen when you're little, right? Like in kindergarten. By the way, if you're an elementary ed major, raise your hand, elementary ed majors, do me a favor. Don't ever do this. What I'm about to say, don't ever do this. Don't let kindergartners, when it's time to play kickball, pick teams. Don't let them pick teams, man. That is a bad idea, because there'll be a little guy like me, and there'll be two guys, like, you know, Jimmy and Tommy, right? I want to be on Jimmy's team, so when he's getting ready to pick, I'm yelling, Jimmy, pick me, man. I can kick that thing super far, all the way, super far, pick me. And he doesn't pick me, and then the teacher says, you're going to be on Tommy's team. And I say, oh, man, I wanted to be on Jimmy's team. How come Jimmy didn't pick me? Stupid. I mean, little kid, I feel left out in kindergarten, right? You can feel left out in junior high. Junior high. Let's say that that same boy, Jimmy, from kindergarten, same boy is having a party in junior high, but he doesn't invite me. Now, my mom doesn't know that he didn't invite me. So I'm at home on a Friday night by myself in my room reading. Oh, yeah. That's what cool kids do, man. I'm reading, and my mom comes in and goes, Jeremy, you got to get ready for Jimmy's party. See, she had talked to Jimmy's mom, but my mom didn't know I wasn't invited. So when she said, you got to get ready for Jimmy's party, all of a sudden I feel left out again because she didn't know. She didn't know I wasn't invited. So that's when I use that word stupid again, and you got to give me some grace on this. In junior high, I used it lots. I would use it like in this situation. I said, I don't want to go to no stupid party. Parties are stupid. All there's going to be is stupid girls there. Probably have stupid pizza and stupid video games. I feel left out as a junior higher, right? It can happen at the collegiate level. It can happen here on this campus. Now, I'm going to say something, and guys, please don't get mad at me. Guys, don't get mad at me. But I'm going to go ahead and tell the girls something that we learn at secret guy school. I know I shouldn't tell them, but girls, do you know that guys are scared of you? We are terrified, absolutely scared of you. We understand. It's basically God, the Pope, and you. You know, we understand how that works, right? So, I mean, you need to be thinking about this for a second. Guys, when we ask a girl on a date, we pretend like we're not scared. So we try to put on this exterior piece of the puzzle, and we might come up to you and say we want to ask you to go to a movie or to Starbucks or something like that. We pretend like it's no big deal. You know, we might say, hey, love to go to the movies. Maybe we could go to coffee first, something like that. It'd be great if you're not busy on Friday. They try to make it look cool on the outside, but I guarantee you that's not what's happening on the inside. These guys are shaking in their boots, dude. If you could see on the inside, they're just like, I hope she doesn't reject me. If my friends find out about this, I could be really embarrassed. I mean, they are scared. If you ever saw a guy in the dorms, I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, think about it. These guys, they're getting ready to call a girl and ask her out. So they don't have to put on the exterior because they're in the dorms. It's hilarious. They're pacing back and forth. Whew. Okay, you can do this. I'm a little bit nervous. Make sure I got the right number. Okay, here we go. Do, do, do. I'm not ready yet. Nope, I got to. Breathe. Okay, here we go. Do, 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 do. Hello? Hey, yes, Samantha, this is Jeremy. Oh, hi, Jeremy. So nice of you to call. I was wondering if you might want to go to a movie this weekend. Oh, Jeremy, so nice of you to ask. But I'm actually going to movies with Jimmy this weekend. Let's review. Kindergarten, Jimmy. Middle school, Jimmy. College, say it with me, Jimmy. Jimmy is my nemesis. Jimmy is stupid. No, don't say that. That's terrible. Don't say that. That's terrible. Don't say that. I'm just letting you know that you can feel left out in multiple situations, multiple times in your life. It happens with grandparents, with parents, with friends, with colleagues, where you can feel left out. What I want to do is take a look this morning at someone in Scripture who felt left out, probably in a deeper way than some of those stories that I just told you. If you would turn to Matthew chapter 8, remember, when we read the Bible, we don't read the Bible to finish, read the Bible to change. Let's review. Don't read it just to finish, read it to change. Now, every story in the Bible is important. This story is also in Mark chapter 1 and Luke chapter 5. So if the same story's in there three times, really better pay attention, right? Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 through 3. Large crowds followed Jesus as he came down the mountainside. Suddenly, a man with leprosy approached him, knelt before him. He said, "Lord, if you're willing, you can heal me and make me clean." Verse 3, Jesus reached out and touched him and said, "I'm willing," or "if I'm willing, be healed." And instantly, the leprosy disappeared. Now, you understand probably a little bit about leprosy, terrible disease. I've seen pictures, and when I've traveled to India, there's still people that have leprosy, and it's very interesting. It's disfiguring. It does a lot of different things. One of the other scriptures actually says it got a severe case of leprosy. Severe case of leprosy. Now, what does that look like? In New Testament times, what does that look like? And even a little bit now, this disease, one thing that it does is that it affects the person's hair, where all their hair turns pitch white. Now, that doesn't mean you professors have it. Sorry, I'm getting a few myself. But your hair turns pitch white. Your hair turns pitch white. It affects your voice and your larynx and your vocal cords. Someone has a severe case of leprosy, they wouldn't talk or be able to sing smooth like the praise team, but if you talk to them, they would have a real rough, gruff-sounding voice, maybe something like this. "How you doing? You guys doing okay? It's nice to meet you." It's destroying the things in their throat. It also, and this is probably the most severe piece, it affects their central nervous system, which allows them to be able to feel. And all of a sudden, now they can't feel. If you've ever studied this and you've seen pictures, why are they missing fingers? Why are they missing ears? Why all the things that have happened to their body? Probably because at one point in time, something happened to them where they couldn't feel the pain. Pain isn't always a bad thing. Pain can be a good thing to tell you something's wrong. For example, maybe they're walking, they step on something, cut the bottom of their foot open, but they don't know that they just cut their foot open. Maybe that gets infected. Something happens in their legs or something starts to move out in their body with these infections, and by the time they start to see what's happening, it's a little bit too late because that disease, that sickness has become advanced by that time. I mean, it's a terrible thing. They used to have to cover themselves up like in a black garment, and according to Leviticus 13:45, they had to yell this word unclean. So they would just walk around and yell, "Unclean, unclean, unclean." Now, what does that mean? Unclean means they're not allowed to participate in any social or religious activities. Okay, they can't participate in any social or religious activities. They can't come to worship in a group like this. They can't go to the ball game in a group like this. They are outcast, right? They are left out. I mean, they might as well have been walking around yelling, "Left out, left out." They're not supposed to go into town to buy things. They're going to be begging. I mean, think about that. That's hard times right there. I mean, it's interesting to me when I was reading in some of the rules in New Testament societies that there was a rule called the 6-foot rule. Okay, what was it called? 6-foot rule. You're supposed to stay 6 feet away from the person that had leprosy. So you see them, they're yelling unclean. You might throw something toward them if you want to be nice, or you're just going to make sure that you stay 6 feet away from them. You're not to be close with them. You know what's awkward to me is I've seen the 6-foot rule happen in church. I've seen the six foot rule happen in schools. You know, you see that person, I'm not talking to that person. They sit over there, I sit over here. If I see him coming this way, then I'm going to go this way. 6-foot rule. Now, I also read in one of those books in the CIU library that you're not allowed to take out or they handcuff you. You know those books like that? I was reading one of the historical books. That's a joke about the library, but hang in there. Do you know what that is, a library? There's books. There's books there, and they talk about some of the religious laws back in New Testament times, and they said the Pharisees actually had a different rule. It wasn't the 6-foot rule. It was called the 50-yard downwind rule. 50 yards downwind. And I was like, what does that mean? 50 yards down. I'm reading this. I'm like, that is unbelievable. What does that mean? And they're looking at it, and I'm reading this little story about one of these traditions that said that the Pharisees looked down upon the lepers much more than the average person would. And they would say, see, I'm up here, you're down here. I'm good, you're bad. I'm righteous, you're a sinner. The reason why you're sick is probably because you did something terrible, right? What'd you do? Did you lie, cheat, steal, curse, lust? Well, obviously, you're getting punished for a sin. Now, we have to be careful with that theory right there, don't we? We have to be careful with that. Can you get sick physically because of a sin? Is it possible? Yes, right? I mean, think about it. If you do drugs and something happens to you physically, that's called reap what you sow. If you drink all the time and you mess up your brain or your liver, that's on you. If you go out and have sex with a bunch of people and you get a sexually transmitted disease, that's called reap what you sow. But just because someone's sick, does it mean for sure that they sin? No, I've got friends probably just like you that are graduates of this school. They're missionaries, right? In Africa and Asia, man, they're getting sick out there in the jungles because they sin? No, because they got malaria. They caught something. You got to be careful with this whole thing about just because someone's sick, it was a sin. Got to be careful. But that's what the Pharisees did. So they said, you know what? We do not associate with people like you. We don't even want to be around you. We don't want to be near you. So you better stay 50 yards away because, number one, we don't want to see you. We don't want to see you. I don't want to look at someone who's like you. Number two, I don't want to hear you. When you're yelling that phrase, unclean, I'm not unclean. So I don't want to even hear that phrase. And number three, 50 yards downwind, I don't want to smell you. Because as this disease went into further stages, death and sickness lets off a stench. So I'll stay here, you stay there. I don't want to see you, I don't want to hear you, I want to smell you. Now, I said at the beginning, why don't you think of a time maybe when you felt left out? Let me ask you a different question, it's a little tougher. Do you remember a time when you've made someone feel left out? Have you ever made someone feel left out? I mean, that's what's happening here. They're purposely pushing that person away. They want them to feel ashamed. They want them to be ostracized. And you're over there, we're over here. It's their doing. Have you ever done that? Made someone feel left out? I remember, I've done this many times, but I remember in high school when I did that. And I'm going to tell you a story here, and please don't do this. Okay, what I'm about to tell you is a sin. You understand? What I'm about to tell you is a sin. So I'm a senior in high school, and I'm in psychology class, and we had a new teacher, and she gave one of those exams where, like, every single person failed. You ever take one of those exams? You're taking the exam, and you're like, what? What? No, no. That question was not in the review notes. I don't think this is right. And you're going through the exam, and have you ever been one of those where it's like every single person fails it? I mean, most everyone probably in my class, they got, like, in the 60s. I got, like, in the 40s, but we don't talk about that. So, but then every once in a while, everyone fails it except one person. Sometimes there's the one person. Don't point. Don't be pointing at someone. Well, in my class, it was a girl named Beverly. She got like a 98. So I went into class, and she's sitting behind me. And what I'm about to do is make her feel left out. We're going through the exam, and about halfway through, Beverly raises her hand. She goes, yeah, Miss Wharton, you marked number 25 wrong. But if you look here in the book, it says in chapter 3, section 4, line 13, in the experiment about Pavlov's dogs. And I'm like, what is she doing? What is she doing? Is she trying to get extra point? She doesn't need extra points. I need extra points. Wow. Can't believe that. About 5 minutes later, she raised her hand again. I'm thinking, are you crazy? Really? You're trying to get extra point when you got 98? She says, Miss Wharton, you also marked number 72 wrong. And it says in chapter 14, I'm just like, I can't, the audacity, no. I'm about to stop this. So I turn around and I yell at her. I turn around and I yell at her. Now what this is called, where I grew up, is called crossing the line. Okay? I'm in Washington, D.C., and I'm about to go over to Virginia for a couple minutes. I turn around, and I say, Beverly, shut up. What are you doing trying to get extra points? Everyone goes, oh. I had crossed the line. But I'm not done yet. I'm not anywhere near done. I'm about to go to Mexico. I turn around. I say, Beverly, shut up. What are you doing trying to get extra points? Everyone else failed it. That's why no one likes you, and that's why you don't have any friends. ¿Cómo está? So the teacher yells at me, Jeremy Kingsley, you go to the office right now, mister. I said, I know where it is. A couple friends gave me five. I made her feel left out. Now, what's interesting is God has been teaching me some lessons about self-control and love and kindness. A few years back, my wife and I were going through our emails. Now remember, my wife and I were high school sweethearts, best friends for 7 years before we got married. We're going through the emails, and this one email pops up. Hi, Jeremy and Dawn, this is Beverly from high school. Do you remember me? Oh, dear. And I get the little tap from Jesus. You ever get the Jesus tap? Need to talk to you. And I don't know what you think or understand about confess sin or unconfessed sin, but God makes it very clear that he says, if you sin against another person, you confess your sin to that person. You become humble and you go to that person and you sincerely apologize and you confess. You call the sin what it was to get their forgiveness. You don't just go to Jesus and go, can you do me a favor? Just go ahead and forgive me for that. I don't really want to talk to them, but you go ahead and forgive me for that. And God goes, I don't think that's the way it's going to work. You see, because I look at the heart. I've always looked at the heart. I bring it up multiple times in Scripture, right? 1 Samuel 16:7, God doesn't look at the exterior, he looks at the heart. He's always looking at the heart, and he goes, you are not going to get forgiven from me because I can see that you're not really being sincere, because if you were really humble right now, you would go to that person, ask forgiveness from them to make sure that you were okay and that you and I could be okay. But obviously that hasn't happened because you're too arrogant right now to ask that person for forgiveness. Now, when I was a junior in high school, senior in high school, 1988-89, I didn't care about people. I didn't care if I hurt them or not. I care now. As a 39-year-old, I care deeply about that. Because I started to understand that second greatest commandment, you're supposed to love your neighbor. You know, maybe the biggest proof of you loving Jesus is how you love people. So, I hit return on this little email to Dear Beverly. I don't know if you remember this, but a long time ago when we were in high school, I embarrassed you and I yelled at you. I made you feel bad because you got a good grade on an exam that I failed. I sinned, would you please forgive me? You don't ever make someone feel left out. Never. We're about trying to build the kingdom, not tear it down. It doesn't matter if it's a Christian or a non-Christian. Jesus is about people coming to him. You understand? We're trying to get people to come to him who are not Christians, that they will believe in Jesus, to have a relationship with him. We're trying to get people who are Christians to grow and have a deeper relationship with him. That's not going to happen when you, or me in this case, act like a jerk and make people feel left out. That's not loving your neighbor. I mean, I'm looking at this guy who feels left out, and I'm trying to figure this out. I mean, it says that there's huge crowds following Jesus right now. Why? Well, he's already healed the royal official's son. He's already healed Peter's mother-in-law. Right, he's already been teaching on this kind of tour. He healed a demon-possessed guy on the Sabbath. And there's so much stuff that's going on. You can read about that when you see in your Harmony of the Gospel. It's kind of that chronological order up to this point. That's why there's large crowds. I mean, everyone's following Jesus and this stuff's going on. And all of a sudden, a guy with leprosy, severe case, starts coming up to Jesus. Now, that's not allowed. That's not allowed. He's breaking the rules. This guy can't come up to Jesus. 6-foot rule. Not to mention, if you want to consider Jesus a religious figure, 50 yards downwind. I mean, this guy can't do that. You can't do that. If you're one of the crowd, you probably would be upset, don't you think? If you're one of the people in this giant crowd, wouldn't you be upset? You know, in Bible times where they stoned people to kill them, they also sometimes threw stones at lepers to keep them at a far distance. Now, it doesn't say if they threw rocks. It doesn't say if they yelled. I'm just wondering if they did. If it was me, that's probably what I would have been doing. Hey, man, you can't come up here. Hey, you're not allowed, man. You're 6 foot. This guy's breaking this. Hey, we'll get the rocks and keep. You can't. We'll throw the rocks at you. You're not allowed. He's a religious leader. You got to go back to where you're supposed to be in your leper colony. You can't come up here. It's interesting that Jesus is so approachable, though. You ever heard that phrase, approachable? Are you approachable? Jesus is so inclusive. Are you inclusive or are you exclusive? You stay in your group, I stay in my group. I love it when Jesus has these people come up to him. It doesn't matter if it's the rich young ruler, it doesn't matter if it's the demoniac, it doesn't matter if it's this guy with leprosy. It seems like Jesus just stands and just waits for that person with this kind of loving peace that kind of exudes out of him. Now, I do have to say, when I read this, it says, the man walked up to Jesus and he what? Knelt down. Proskuneo. To bow, kneel, or crouch down. Do you understand? He just walks up and just gets on the ground before he says a word. But I'll say this, that's making a statement without using words, don't you think? Just walking up there and bowing before you even talk. I mean, I try to picture it in my head, like, what if I was there? What did that look like? I mean, was this guy coming? Were people yelling at him? Were people starting to get rocks? But Jesus, he's not moving. And this guy with leprosy, he's got his nasty garment on. Is he yelling unclean? I don't know. He just wants to get to Jesus and bow. I mean, can you see it? After he bows, he talks. After humility, he talks. Sometimes I wonder, should I even be able to talk to Jesus? I mean, I know that he's a father, but he's the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. Should I be able to talk to him without even bowing first? But I think it's interesting. Big statement. He does this action before he talks. And from the ground, he says, Lord, if you're willing, could you please heal me of this disease? Now listen to the phrase. If you're willing. He didn't say, if you have the power, could you please use that power to heal me right now? He didn't say that. If it's in your capacity to do something miraculous, he didn't do that. He said, if you're willing. Do you understand what that means? He didn't appeal to Jesus' power. He appealed to Jesus' heart. I mean, who does that? He put Jesus' heart, exposed on the line. If in your heart, there's some special spot in there that would maybe make you want to help me, could you do that? If in your heart there's a spot for me? Jesus' reaction, unbelievable. Jesus' reaction is unbelievable. This guy did an action before he talked, so Jesus says, I'm going to match you. I'm going to do an action before I talk. One of the other Gospels, it says, Jesus felt compassion for him. Right? There has to be an action. It's love with action. If there's no action, it's not compassion. There has to be an action. Jesus said, you did something huge before you talked. Now I'm going to do something huge before I talk. What does it say? Jesus felt compassion for him. Jesus touched him. Can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. Now Jesus is going to be unclean. He's going to have to go through some ritual and ceremonial washings to become clean. You can't touch someone with leprosy. What if you get the disease? I mean, that's against the rules. You don't touch someone with leprosy. I mean, what are you going to do? You guys going to make a little small group on your own here in Columbia? Columbia International University. What are you going to do? You're going to make a little small group and go down to the big hospitals downtown where there's an AIDS ward. You know how lepers lived in the leper colony? Everyone that has leprosy lives together. You know, in the hospitals, AIDS ward. Everyone had AIDS in there. You're going to make up some permission slips, right? So you won't sue, and you're going to go make sure they're signed, go to the doctor and say, we have some people. We'd like to go into the AIDS ward where those guys that used to weigh 200 pounds, now they weigh about 40 pounds. We just want to go in there and hold their hand. Because the only thing that ever touches them is instruments. What are you going to do? Is that what you're going to do? I mean, you don't touch someone with AIDS, right? Or maybe you do. I mean, Jesus, he touches that guy. And then he looks at him like, if I'm willing, in my heart, yeah, I'm willing. Of course I'm willing. I love you. I care about you. I care about people. They're left out. I'm always loving those people. Yes, be healed. Instantly, leprosy disappeared. Now, you know that's cool. I don't know what happened right there, but something huge happened. I don't know the details of a severe case as far as him in particular, but I have to ask the question. I mean, when he was on the ground, if his hair was pitch white, what color was it originally? Did he have red hair, brown hair, blonde hair, black hair? Did it just turn back to regular color? I mean, did his voice go from rough to gruff, or rough and gruff to smooth when he told Jesus, thank you? Lord, I just want to thank you so much. I mean, if he was missing fingers, did all of a sudden he have fingers like Wolverine? I mean, what happened? All I know is it says, instantly disappeared. A long time ago when I lived in the West Dorm, first floor, room 113, I learned about a song. Sorry, I left those cookies in there from 86, but that joke doesn't make sense since I didn't graduate high school, but hang in there. I was listening to a song that someone gave to me, and it was a song that said, don't tell people Jesus loves them until you're ready to love them too. I thought, that's an odd song. You just said, don't tell people Jesus loves them. But then the next phrase was, until you're ready to love them too. See, when I grew up in the 80s and I came here fall of 1990, I grew up with some guys that we had some different issues with different types of people and different sins. And one of them was that some of my friends and I, when we would find out if a person was gay, homosexual, we'd be mean to them. I mean mean, hateful. Now don't get me wrong. I understand that that's a sin. I know what it says in Romans chapter 1 and a bunch of other verses in the Bible that man's not supposed to be with a man, woman's not supposed to be with a woman, a man supposed to be with a woman, supposed to leave and cleave. I understand that. I know it's a sin. I know homosexuality is a sin. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how we treat someone who maybe has an issue with that particular sin versus many other ones. See, it was funny because if I meet someone who lies, I'm nice to that person. I meet someone who cheats, I'm nice to them. I mean, you steal, but you're still my friend. But if you have an issue with that sin, I hate you. And I had some problems with that. And when I heard that song, a couple of my prayer partners came down to my room because we used to pray every night at 10 o'clock. And we started praying about what it means to love people. We can still call sin sin, but still love people the same. And I started working on it, and I made a commitment that every time I would hear this song or this other song, I would pray for my heart and pray for people that struggle with that sin. Well, a few years ago, I was preaching in Atlanta at this church, and this guy was there, and I didn't know at the time that he had made a commitment to Jesus. I didn't know that. Well, they had asked me to come back the next year. So I came back the next year, and as we're setting up, I'm getting my microphone on, I'm kind of talking to the band. This guy comes up to me and goes, hey, Jeremy, I want to talk to you. I didn't know who he was. I didn't remember him. And the way he kind of said my name, the way he was walking, I started to get kind of that phobic reaction. This guy might be gay. I'm not sure. I feel like I remember something about him. And I start praying, God, I'm feeling a little awkward right now. And right when he comes up to me, he puts his arms out like he wants to hug me. And again, I'm thinking, oh, dear. This guy comes up, so I open up my arms. I'm really scared. He gives me this big, huge hug, and he kisses me on the cheek. Now, in that split second, I had to make a decision. One, do I shove this guy? I mean, push him and shove him and just lay into this guy verbally What are you doing? You don't come up to someone who's a guest and give him a hug and kiss him on the cheek when he doesn't know who you are. I don't even know what your name is. That's, you understand how inappropriate that is? And just lay into him. Or you just hug this guy and let's just wait and let Jesus help. And for one of the first times in my whole life, I made the right decision and I hugged him. And then he kissed me, and I just hugged him again, waved from let go, and he let go. I said, "Hey, I'm sorry. Have we ever met before? Not sure I've ever met you." And I shook his hand. He goes, "Yeah, I don't know if you remember me. I was here last year when you came." I said, "Hey, you're kind of ringing a bell." He said, "Actually, last year when I came here, I became a Christian that night. I gave my life to Jesus, asked him to forgive me for my sin. I told him that I hurt him real bad, and I became a Christian. But when I came here, what you probably didn't know is I was homeless and I was gay. But I have since then got a job, I've joined this church, and I'm not gay anymore. But it started that night when I met Jesus when you were here last year. And I started thinking, what if I would have pushed him and shoved him and yelled at him? How terrible would it have been when all he wanted to do was say, "Thank you for introducing me to Jesus. Here's what's happened." And I just push him and yell at him. I'm so thankful that one time I didn't blow it. You see, you never, never make people feel left out. Never. It doesn't matter if it's in your family with your mom and dad, brothers and sisters. It doesn't matter if it's your spiritual family here. When you're in the lunchroom or you're in the dorms or you're in a class, you don't treat professors like that. Professors, you don't treat students like that. You understand what we're trying to do? We're trying to build the kingdom. We need to become approachable, inclusive. We'll stand on sin and we'll make our stands of what's right and what's wrong. This is what we stand against. This is what we stand for. But one thing that we should always make sure is a base level is that we are going to say we love God, greatest commandment. Number two, we're going to love people. We're not going to make people feel left out.
We hope you were blessed by this message. Additional audio messages and learning resources are available at www.ciu.edu/bookstore. Or call 803-807-5263. Messages are also available by podcast at iTunes. CIU is a regionally accredited biblical university offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs. Our purpose is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for letting us minister to you today.